the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. Like always, I got Jason sitting over in the corner with me, and today we got the distinct pleasure to be able to have Dr. Eric Webster from the LSU Ag Center on the call-in hotline. How you doing in South Louisiana, Eric? I bet it's hot down there today.
Oh man, I'm doing well. That you asked, but the temps have been rough the last few days. It's been last week was real comfortable. Humidities were low, even though we were in the 90s. The humidities had really dropped, and seems like that happens when a hurricane's either moving up the coast or whatever. But this week has just been brutal. The older I get, the harder they get on me. But yeah, it's been tough this week.
It is here too.
Looks like August outside.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, that's right.
You know.
Yeah, it feels like it too.
The trees even look bad now. They just kind of.
Yeah, this is. I'm not a big fan of watering grass, but I put some new sod in at my house, and it's really stressing a little bit. So I had to cut some water on last night, but grass is not growing in the yard. It's probably the longest stretch we've had without a lot of measurable rain. You know, when you get a week, an inch or two a week, and then it all of a sudden cuts off, that grass starts hurting in a hurry. And we're at that point now.
Yeah, ours just really depends on where you're standing, because, you know, we were talking before we hit record, you know, there was places that got rain a couple weeks ago. But Bobby here, I don't know, it's been 3 weeks at least.
At least.
Maybe four. I don't remember specifically, but you're right. You know, when it cut off and stuff had gotten accustomed to having it pretty regular, and now it doesn't. So some plants are really suffering out there now.
Yeah. Well, Eric, you know, y'all have been harvesting, what, about 3-4 weeks now down there? How's rice harvest
coming? There was some. The earliest I heard down in Vermilion Parish was usually it's not unheard of, and it was happening this year, that first week of July. The first was being cut then. I think we're about 2 weeks ahead of where we've been the last couple of years, even though, in a lot of cases, some people planted a little bit later, but it's just the weather's been almost perfect for rice. And
well, I've heard some really good yields out of there so far, and I know y'all needed that because last year wasn't that great for y'all, was it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a real consistent year. The one thing that I noticed this year, and Johnny Sechuk used to always say, if a field looks like a pool table, it's good rice, and there was a lot of that. And then the one thing I really noticed this year, once a field started heading, the whole field headed. It wasn't spots in the field.
Wasn't very erratic. Now, we've had some erratic heading up here this year, but for the most part, we're just now getting into what I would consider full-blown headedness. About 75% headed up here, and some of the later planted rice is heading more uniform than the earlier planted rice.
Yeah, and I think we're statewide, you know, we're probably a little over 50% harvested for the first crop. So if the crop looks good, the yields, I don't know if we're going to break records, but we're going to have a really good, consistent year. Things look good, especially on the first crop.
In an early crop like that, you got a big percent of your acres that, you know, have the opportunity for a second harvest too, right?
Yeah, there's been most of the stuff that's been cut that I have seen has been prepared and water's back on it. I probably got more calls this year than I have in the past on, you know, possible weed control recommendations for a ratoon crop, which is kind of unusual. They tend not to do a whole lot if they can help it, because it's, you know, so they're, I guess they're thinking that had such a good crop the first time around, the first crop, that the tillers, the plant's strong, so there's probably a good chance at a good second crop. And growing conditions right now are good. Not good for pollinating if your rice is pollinating, but as far as growing conditions, good warm nights. The fields I've seen harvested that are flooded and growing back really look good too.
Thanks, Eric. We got a lot of rice pollinating now. Glad people would love to hear that, but we've always got a couple people up here that try the second crop, But I think our earliest fields was probably drained 10 days ago, so we'll probably won't have many people trying that up here this year. We've had some guys have success with it in the past, but we're just a little far north.
Man, yeah, everything has got to go. You got to be early, and it's got to go right. What is it, Eric? Kind of rule of thumb, is it 60 days that you allow for?
That's generally what they shoot for, and, you know, when you can get a crop out by the middle of July, the 1st of August, you got a good shot. And, you know, you don't get into that fall. The problem you get into a lot of time in the fall is you can get into some of those wet times, and it just makes it almost impossible to get out there and get the crop out. So you kind of beat that if you can start harvesting latter September, 1st of October. You know, that's generally one of the drier parts of the year, so you can get in and get out. And I don't think we've had to, and I haven't seen everything, but I don't think we've had to rut up a lot of fields this year either because of the hot weather. It's dried quick, and so I think everything's really setting itself up for a good second crop.
I would think for us, Bobby, that on an early harvest, we'd err more towards taking advantage of the opportunity to get a field worked up and in shape to plant beans on next year rather than, you know, running the risk of having a field that you might be able to harvest again, you might not, and then not being able to work it up.
Yeah, and I think that what you just said is a major driver of why we're seeing row rice acres increase in these especially heavy, heavy buckshot soil areas of North Louisiana as well as over here in Mississippi, where we're worried just as much about that soybean crop in rotation as we are about that rice crop. And maybe that's why we're going to see a lot of these attempts at ratoon in the upper Mid-South go away.
Yeah, the field prep is just, I mean, the value, I mean, we've seen it. We've talked about it on here, you know, over the past few weeks. The value of having the field worked up going into the spring, man, it gets you off on the right foot so much better than, especially on a buckshot, you know, where you know, it may be April, even May, depending on how bad the shape the field is before you can get, and how wet the spring is before you get in there and are able to get it smoothed back up. So it just is invaluable being able to do it in the fall. So, you know, speaking of row rice, Eric, what's your feeling on that now after a few years of seeing, and I know you've done some work in it as well. What's your feeling on it?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're doing a fair amount of work in it this year and a little bit last year. We're kind of increasing that a little bit. You know, you drive up through North Louisiana, especially that Tallulah North, you get into a lot of row rice. I saw a lot earlier in the summer. And it's sort of adapted up there. Those guys have taken it on. The guys that are doing it are doing a good job with it. The one thing that I've seen this year even more than last year is some of our stuff, we added a little bit more nitrogen to. It seemed like it was playing out a little bit more compared to our flooded stuff. We've got some very similar trials side by side, one flooded and one not, and doing the same weed control programs, just sort of feeling, you know, getting a sense of what we need to be doing, overlaying residuals more, you know, looking at overlaid residuals. Are we going to need them more in row rice versus a water seeded system? But the thing that I noticed is that it was just, because of the rains that we've gotten, I think we just played out of our nitrogen, and we've just sort of been spoon-feeding it the last couple of weeks. I'm probably going to do another one. I think I'm still a couple of weeks. We planted later in that area this year because of waiting on a piece of equipment that we had ordered, and that nitrogen just playing out a little bit more, which sort of leads to what most of the agronomists are saying. Look, you're going to have to kind of spoon-feed a little bit more, and I kind of see that more this year more than I did last year. Weed control wise, it's just going to be a constant need for something.
Well, it's always been that old adage of nitrogen and water don't mix. And the way we generally put nitrogen out and maintain and establish that flood and kind of lock it in where it can't go nowhere is completely different in this row rice scenario. So now you almost have to look at it like a cornfield, but a cornfield we keep wet all the time, and that's definitely going to change how we do our nitrogen. We're seeing we need three, if not four, applications, and that fourth application many times here is going on the top side of the field. Now, one thing in talking to a lot of our consultants down here, and I'll let you and Jason hit on this, is what I've been hearing a lot of them in respect to that overlap and residuals is they feel like what they're getting out of prowl in a row rice scenario is huge.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that system is kind of tailor-made for prowl because you're not going to put it out at planting. So if you're putting it out, you know, after the rice comes up and, if it's one of those later applications where you're going to be cycling the water through, then you got, better chance of getting it incorporated. I think prowl's definitely had a resurgence here in our regular paddy rice too. I have more conversations about it over the last few years than I do. And then some of the occasional injury concerns you have with prowl kind of go away. Other than the pre-injury, as rice is germinating, but the injury you can get, when it's after the rice is up, and we've sent you pictures of that before, Eric, and I've seen the stuff that you've sent back. So it happens occasionally, just pruning roots off. Some of that concern is alleviated by not having a flooded environment.
Yeah, and that one of the things that we do with prowl is we tend to, what our guys, especially in South Louisiana, we're overlaying in paddy rice. We're putting command up front, and then we'll come back with a prowl as that overlay residual. The problem we get into sometimes is that overlay is too quick, and the rice is not recovered from the command, and then you put the prowl on it, and it sort of slows that rice down a little bit. One of the things that I've been trying to talk these guys into is let's wait a little bit longer. Let's get two leaves on that rice instead of it just coming out of the ground, doing a late delayed pre, if you will. Let's get a couple of leaves on that rice. Let's get that root down in the ground and then do it. And I think that sort of extended that control out for us in the paddy system. But then a lot of times, if you wait a little bit later in the paddy system, you put the prowl out, and then you throw a flood on it. In my opinion, you've just wasted the prowl. You really didn't need it if you were going to come that quick with a flood. Where in that row rice, I tend to call it upland rice. So if I say that while we're talking about this, just bear with me.
I think technically the term that we need to use that everybody's cited on is furrow irrigated rice.
Yeah.
But I don't use it either. I call it row rice.
Yeah, well, and I think that, again, that's a terminology thing that a lot of people tend to be, using different things. And then when I get a question, I'll kind of clarify what they're doing. But, yeah, that prowl in that row rice, fur irrigated rice, upland rice, whatever you want to call it, it tends to, you get the life of it a lot longer. You're nursing that flush across it. You get that activation repeatedly. You may not be pushing it down lower into that root zone, so you tend to get less of that injury, Jason, that you were talking about. So I can see where facet has a nice little fit in there too, because you get those bumps in control every time you get a little bit of flush across the field.
Yeah, the way I've described it, with the exception of Bolero, you've got, for us, I think you've got three products and four applications of a residual. So, counting two applications of command. So we could do a pint and a pint, in two separate applications. And then we've got an application of prowl, and then we got an application of facet. And so basically you got four treatments to spread across three applications. So you may mix one at some point, or you may not. But I think everything we've done, three applications, we've been pretty successful with that. And there may be, in a commercial situation, if you take our plots into commercial field, there may be a scenario where you might need a clincher application, but for the most part, that three applications has done pretty well. So kind of, for folks in the Delta, I kind of describe it like growing cotton, an overlay and a residual, and then having a lay-by application that goes out, in at the same time as your big application of fertilizer, and then start cycling the water from there.
Yeah, and that's, another product that's shown a lot of residual for us that works well is like a gambit in that system too, especially on the broadleaf.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That really has a nice fit, in my opinion, in the row rice system. the biggest issue that I have with the row rice system is we, as a paddy rice researcher for most for all of my career, and a lot of that in water seeded, the spectrum changes, and all of a sudden you start calling me about weeds that I haven't had to deal with, like a goosegrass or a Johnson grass or things like that. That's where, you know, we got to go back and kind of reevaluate these things, and you don't necessarily have those, that weed pressure in our research plot. So that's the biggest thing, and I tell people all the time too about rice herbicides. You have to understand that every rice herbicide label has water in the system somewhere.
Well, and then we tell people too, you know, every single variety that has been bred for a paddy rice system too.
That's right.
For us researchers that have spent a career working in paddy rice, it's difficult to, okay, as this system transitions, what do we do? And you mentioned Johnson grass. Jason and I looked at a row rice field the other day that the only weed in it was the big clumps of Johnson grass.
Yeah, it looked great, except for the
tabletop flat.
Yeah.
You know, I know that you're doing other things down there and some things that we're not doing up here. And one thing I've been interested in hearing you or wanting to hear you talk about is this application of herbicide mixed onto your fertilizer. And in this, I think we're talking about the loin. In the past, I know y'all have done a lot of command mixed on fertilizer down there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we kind of started that, actually probably started back before I even got down here. We were doing a lot, the guys were doing a lot of Londax on the fertilizer, you know, and I'd like to take credit for this loin on the fertilizer, but, you know, as Ford Baldwin used to always say, we never figure out what a herbicide is going to do till it gets in a grower's hands or a consultant's hands, and they start doing things with it that we really hadn't thought about. And some of our field reps have consultants have started doing the fertilizer with loin. I'll be honest with you, I didn't think it would work, and I had some concerns about it. But it does have a nice little fit for us, especially down here in South Louisiana, because we're going to flood rice early. It's not unusual for us to flood rice in the three-leaf stage drill-seeded rice.
And we flood rice extremely late in Mississippi, so we're on the opposite end of the spectrum.
And you guys may have a little bit different feel than I do about loin, but I think loin is it's a typical auxin herbicide. They tend to work a little bit better when it's cooler. They don't like the real hot temps. They don't. And what we're able to do, even if we spray it on, we're able to get it out in a timely fashion. If we're flooding fields, we get that flood on early. The temperatures are still relatively cool. We're going after smaller weeds. So it tends to really fit our system. I got a lot of guys that I talked to this year that, you know, were a command up front and shot a loin and they walked away from it. And the loin on the fertilizer has a lot of potential. The one thing, if you compare it, if you know, as we all do, we're as scientists, as you know, replicated studies, we're going to put a spray out and we're going to put the granule out and have them side by side to look at them. If you're looking at them like that, you're giving up some stuff with the fertilizer. There's no doubt about that. But you're also gaining some stuff, ease of application, the less likelihood of drift. My biggest issue that I was concerned about is if we drop that fertilizer in the water with that auxin herbicide on it, are we doing something with that urea or whatever fertilizer you choose to use? Is it pulling the active molecule out? Will it be more volatile? We don't seem to have that issue. It was the unknown thing and the scare of, oh, an auxin, we got to be real careful what we do with it. But you know, it really has a lot of potential, and the residual, if you will, that we're getting out of it in the water is amazing at how long we can control weeds over time.
Eric, you're doing this in a water-seeded culture?
We're doing both, yeah. We're okay. Doing water-seeded rice, and we're doing it in drill-seeded. Loyant loves water, and so, you know, I tell guys, even if you're putting it on dry ground, I don't like the fertilizer on dry ground, but if you're spraying it on dry ground, get that flood established within 3 days.
Yeah,
it does a whole lot better. And, of course, if you're doing the fertilizer, in my opinion, it needs to be dropped into the flood. One of the things that I've noticed, it sort of has that ALS-type appearance in that it sort of stops the growth. A lot of the stuff that you're used to seeing dying back doesn't necessarily die, but it doesn't grow either. It just sort of sits there, sort of squats it down. It's not competitive. Things like the smart weeds, weeds that we call bulls, a lot of our aquatics down here in South Louisiana, it just sort of puts a halt to them. It's kind of interesting to look at them because it just, when you put it on, they don't grow.
So with that application, you're pretty much targeting an aquatic weed spectrum?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, it sort of goes into that. It fits our system well because we got a lot of duck salad, especially on water-seeded rice. You're going to get a little bit of movement, a lot more open areas in the field. But things like bull tongue, a lot of the Sagittarius, like pickerel weed, those kind of things. Creeping burrhead is really becoming more and more of an issue for us. It's really good on. It's just death on duck salad, alligator weed, those kind of things. And so I think there's a really good place for that in on the fertilizer here in Louisiana.
Do the target weeds have to be submerged?
Not necessarily, no. I mean, you want them, you know, I think the deeper flood works better, but, you know, you definitely want to have, you know, half of the plant is a good rule of thumb. You don't want to try to, you know, as if you've seen with Loyan, it's really good on joint vetches and sesbanias. You don't want a 6/8-inch joint vetch or sesbania. It just doesn't take it all the way down. But if you can get a 3-4-inch sesbania joint vetch with a 2-3-inch flood, man, you can do a pretty good number on those weeds. And then, you know, one of the things that we've done, too, is playing with rates. I tell people all the time, every weed has a different X rate for a herbicide. You know, a lot of the resistance, and I'm going to start rambling here, so y'all tell me to stop if I get too far. For example, Permit, you know, we use a lot of quarter and a third ounce of Permit to control nutsedge, and then everybody says, oh, well, that's a lower rate. You're going to cause resistance. It's not a lower rate on nutsedge. That's the X rate for nutsedge. And so what we've done with Loyant, we've done the same thing on our weed spectrum, is where is the rate for that particular weed? For example, duck salad, if it's small, you know, just coming out of the ground, man, 4 to 6 ounces is all you need. And even if it's what I call a spoon leaf duck salad, probably eight ounces is all you need. That's probably overkill. And then 8 to 10 ounces for alligator weed, you know, barnyard grass, 16 ounces. So that's where we can kind of tailor. You tell me what weeds you have. If you're not overrun with barnyard grass, you know, we can back that rate off of Loyant. We can drop that price, and we can kill two birds with one stone, put it on fertilizer, and get it in one application. So it really kind of has worked out nice in our system.
Eric, the other thing that's, you know, gaining more traction this year has been the Provisia system. What has it looked like in Louisiana for 2020?
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to a lot of guys down here with it. You know, there's a fair amount of the PVL01, the original line that was sold. It's got a lot of issues, as you know. It's real susceptible to disease. It's real susceptible to Provisia injury. But there's some pretty decent yields on it. It's kind of holding its own for that particular line. You know, it's not a yield drag. That variety's giving you all it's got. You know, there's nothing to drag on it. It's just doing the best it can.
Yeah.
Now, the O2, the PVL02 that's coming out, it's more tolerant. And I tell people this all the time. I don't think we'll ever get out of the injury with this system, with the grass system. We lucked out with Clincher with the amount of injury or no injury that we saw with that particular product. But I don't know if we'll ever get out of totally no injury on the Provisia rices. That's just the nature of the beast. But the O2 is much more tolerant than the O1. It's a better looking rice. And you know, our yields are right in there. Some of the earlier stuff I've seen, it's in the 170 to 180 per acre bushel range. There's a lot of talk that with our wheaty rice or red rice or whatever, feral rice, whatever you want to call it, I think there's going to be a lot of PVL02 planted in Louisiana next year. And depending on how this return crop comes out in it, I think it's got a lot of potential.
So working the herbicide system, are you doing the straight 15.5 ounces twice, or are you tweaking that some?
Yeah,
What's your strategy there?
A lot of our guys are 15.5 twice. You know, I'll be honest with you, I like the 10, 10, 10. I think we need that third application just like we did in Clearfield rice. We had New Path with two applications of a residual product, and we still needed a third one, which when they came with the Beyond, I really like splitting it up, and we're getting those escapes and things as well. I was talking to somebody the other day that, you know, talked about the skips in the field, and he said, well, you know, really it's not a third application if it's a skip. It never got treated the first time anyway. So, you know, I guess I said, well, that's a different way to look at it.
It's not untrue.
Yeah. You know, so, but I really like that. 12 ounces. I mean, if you look at the Sure label, which, you know, was the previous Quetzalopop label, when we were looking at it in soybeans, we were in the 8-12 ounce range, and that was for red rice control in soybeans. So I think the 15.5 is a little bit too high, and I would really like to see, you know, 3-11s or 3-12s is really probably would be a nice fit. But from a grass control standpoint, man, we don't have anything in rice that controls grasses like Provisia does.
I agree, and it's fast too. You know, on your regular, you know, like barnyard grass and crabgrass stuff like that, it works really fast. What I've seen on the limited, you know, obviously our acres have been much more limited than what yours have been, but this stuff has gone on the, you know, on marginal fields. And by marginal, I mean, you know, there's marginal whether they need to be growing rice on them, because the red rice, weedy rice, volunteer rice, again, whatever you want to call it, is so bad. And so my idea on that third application is kind of what you said. If it doesn't get sprayed the first time, it's not three applications. But I think the lower rate and adding the third application, it kind of allows you to control some of those earlier emerging plants and then kind of, you know, knocking the top out and then getting the stuff that's coming underneath it with that third application. Because I don't think we're necessarily missing all that much grass. We're just, it's so thick out there, it's been a coverage issue.
Yeah, and like y'all were saying a while ago, you're waiting. Where we flood rice early in South Louisiana, y'all are more of a much delayed. And the longer you delay that flood, then after that second application of Provisia, you're allowing that rice, you're allowing those weeds to germinate and get a second flush. I will say, though, that the Quetzalopop has, the Provisia has a lot more residual than what we originally thought. And you guys have looked at it more in a burn down system for ryegrass and things like that. So y'all know that residual's there. So it's not great residual, but that's the one positive about the 15.5 ounce rate is the residual that you get out of it.
And that's right. It's hard to see. And I think it's one of those that is kind of lagniappe. If you get some residual out of it, great, but it's not something that you're going to go put out expecting, hey, I'm going to get even a week worth of residual. It's just kind of icing on the cake. If you got a good application and a lot of it hits bare ground, then you have the opportunity to suppress, you know, a few emerging plants.
Sure.
I know we've really liked it in our guys working in our plots. We've got some fields that we've cleaned up with Provisia, and if you got it side by side with the Clearfield variety, and there's no doubt you saying fast is fast.
I mean, with the exception of propanil, you start talking about grass control and rice, I mean, it's as fast as anything. You know, when we were rating plots with New Path, we don't even bother going and looking at it till 14 days just because the expectation is not there until that point. But with Provisia, you know, you can generate some pretty strong data.
It stops growth immediately. I mean, and that you can see that the next day. You know, when you're looking at it compared to a non-treated, it pretty much puts the brakes on that plant, and it's already, you know, slowing it down. We've done some work on, you know, how late can we go, and also, you know, how much do we need to kill a big rice? And as the, you know, younger it is, 2 to 3 leaf rice, it doesn't take near as much Provisia to kill that as you do when you get into the PI. And so, you know, we've done some of that. We may not be killing it with some of those, you know, 9-10 ounce rates. It may not totally knock it all the way out, but it's not heading either. Not at the same time frame that our rice is, our target rice, our conventional rice, if you will, the harvestable rice. It's, you're at least stopping that heading. And that right there is, you know, you can keep that seed going in the combine.
Yeah, that's the key. Well, and back in the seed bank too for next year.
That's so right. Yeah,
we've been going for a while. Is there anything else you want to let folks know while we got you on the line? You got a captive audience.
This is the second time I've done this with y'all, and so like when we were passing texts back and forth a while ago, I was just thinking about it yesterday. I really enjoy this. You guys are. I talk to a lot of guys here in Louisiana that listen to you, and you too, and y'all are doing it right. And I appreciate the opportunity to be on there with you. And y'all got something to hang your hat on. This is big, man. This is good stuff.
Well, we appreciate that. And you're backed by popular demand, so
everybody likes to talk to Eric.
Yeah, no, everybody likes hearing what Eric has to say.
Well, I appreciate that. That gets me in trouble sometimes.
Yeah, that's not necessarily true. I mean, because you know, in this context, you know, you're talking about rice. So everybody, you know, that's listening, interested in rice, they understand what you're talking about, but you're bringing it from a different angle just because of the difference in the culture. You know, a lot of it's applicable, not quite all of it's applicable, but they, you know, people like to envision different ways of doing things.
Well,
so it's
good. One thing that Linscomb told me a long time ago, getting a different perspective, going and seeing something different, hearing how someone else does it, is always going to be able to be brought back to your farm and help you out. So even though you might be working in water seeded rice in South Louisiana, it's going to give somebody an idea up here of how to use something in their operation.
Well, I hope so. That's what we're doing it for.
Well, we're going to jump off again. We certainly appreciate it. And folks, if we can do anything for y'all, just give us a call.
Thanks, guys.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.